Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, stories. Oh, that's me. It started fading out. Yeah, I've had that feeling. Ladies and gentlemen, stories about the progress of justice at home and abroad. Captain Stephen Roller of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department has told the Long Beach Post. I didn't know they had a post in Long Beach. But what else are you going to put a flag on? That it is standard practice to detain and pat down photographers as potential terrorists for activity such as photographing a courthouse. A courthouse, ladies and gentlemen. Well, you know what goes on in there. Things that we don't need to see, don't need to know about. So, Roller said that in such a case, it's acceptable to conduct a pat-down search prior to attempting to find out why the individual is photographing the courthouse. That, in fact, this is part of officer training at the LA County Sheriff's Department. Roller identifies himself as the unit commander of the Long Beach County Courthouse. He was discussing the Sheriff's Department investigation into a June detainment and pat-down search for suspicion of photographing the courthouse. He approved of the pat-down. But here's the part, ladies and gentlemen, is if all that seems normal to you, yeah, I know. That's where we're at. But here's the part that should warm the cockles. Roller, just to confirm, he's Captain Stephen Roller of the County Sheriff's Department, confirms that the aesthetics of the photographic subject is a criterion in determining whether a photographer's activity is suspicious. Quote, "Look, I got to tell you, the Long Beach courthouse is not that attractive," he says. "Now, the new one may be different, but the old one, it's not attractive, okay? So does that person photographing the old courthouse fit into the potential terrorist kind of thing? Well, let's go check it out." Unquote. That consideration echoes the policy outlined in Los Angeles Police Department Special Order Number 11, which lists among suspicious activity to be reported by police officers, quote, "takes pictures with no apparent aesthetic value," unquote. So next time you're wondering if there's any aesthetic value in the photograph you're thinking of taking, ask a cop. Now, if you're wondering, or a sheriff, now if you're wondering why the United States and Iraq didn't come to an agreement on the well, first of all, there's all this noise, probably, this weekend about the announcement President Obama made on Friday, kind of a mission accomplished announcement, that the United States was withdrawing all its troops from Iraq, even though, as Republican critics charged correctly, the United States until very recently, was trying very hard to keep troops in Iraq, trying to get the Iraqi government to agree to keep some U.S. troops in Iraq. So it was the other mission that was accomplished, the one that we didn't want to accomplish. Now, couple things. There will be still some U.S. kind of military in Iraq, I think 5,000 to 10,000. It's just they're going to be private contractors working for the State Department, which, yeah, sure, the State Department knows how to command troops. And two, or B, the reason, apparently the stumbling block for the failure of the Iraqi government, or the refusal of the Iraqi government to agree to the continued presence of U.S. troops, was the United States' demand that the U.S. troops not be subject to Iraqi law and justice, that they be immune to be dealt with only by American military justice. So, what's wrong with that? This from McClatchy Newspapers, a U.S. diplomatic cable made public by WikiLeaks provides evidence that U.S. troops executed at least 10 Iraqi civilians, including a woman in her 70s and a five-month-old infant, then called in an airstrike to destroy the evidence during a controversial 2006 incident in the central Iraqi town of Ishaqi. The cable, unclassified, which was posted on a WikiLeaks website in August, contained questions from a UN investigator about the incident, which had angered local Iraqi officials who demanded some kind of action from their government. U.S. officials denied at the time that anything inappropriate had happened. But the UN special rapporteur, pardon moi, on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions, said in a communication to American officials dated 12 days after the incident that autopsies performed in the city of Tikrit showed that all the dead had been handcuffed and shot in the head. Among the dead, four women and five children. The children were all 5 years old or younger. As of 2010, the most recent data he had, the UN official said U.S. officials hadn't responded to his request for information and that Iraq's government also hadn't been forthcoming. He said the lack of response from the United States was, quote, the case with most of the letters to the U.S. in the 2005-2007 period. He could provide no further information on the incident. So maybe that's what's ticking the Iraqis off. Some of that. No, that's a one-off. You know that. The U.S. system of military justice, therefore, is, here's how it looks right now. If you happen to be captured somewhere near some place that where we think some terrorist might be, maybe photographing an unaesthetic object, you'll spend a few years in Guantanamo and maybe then get released when you've had your second or third hearing and they find, why are we holding him? But if you've handcuffed and shot in the head some women and children, go on about your business. Maybe one of the casualties of this whole period is the reputation of the United States system of justice. It's going to take maybe 100 more episodes of Boston Legal and maybe even bringing back the defenders to fix that. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sometime after sunset, he is on his hands and knees. He is searching for his keys at a small Vietnamese place on East 11th Street. His daughters both at once say, can we just get going, please? As his wife begins to sneeze and his son is throwing peas and eating with his feet. He's an action hero and he should be fighting crime, leaping between the buildings and racing against time. He's an action hero, he's an action hero in his mind, in his mind. By Mount Sinai, where they're running through some tests, and they've taped things to his chest, and they're all doing their best to make him feel at ease. The doctor says it's really just an educated guess. I suggest you get some rest, try to cut back on stress, 'cause I don't like what I see. But the action hero swears he feels just fine. He's got to finish.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol, Jr. Excuse me, Jim Ebersol, Jr. Olympic bosses have held crisis talks over a possible boycott of the 2012 London Games. This according to the British newspaper, The Sunday Express. What's the hurry? Senior Olympic sources have admitted a mistake was made this summer when Dow Chemical Company was awarded sponsorship of the £500 million main stadium in East London. They are worried they've insulted India because the U.S. company Dow owns Union Carbide, which was responsible for the 1984 gas leak disaster in Bhopal, India. The Indian government is in the middle of a $1 billion legal action against Dow. Games chiefs have considered canceling the £7 million sponsorship, which gave Dow exclusive marketing rights for the stadium, allowing its logo to be pictured in all photographs leading up to the Games. However, they're concerned the company would launch a lawsuit, which could itself cost £50 million. This seems to be about money. Highly placed Games source said, quote, "We're trying to find a solution, but I don't think it's going to happen. We've made a mistake. That's accepted now. But we're desperately hoping this doesn't blow up into something bigger. It would be a disaster if it did." Bad choice of words, babe. Something blowing up is what Dow was awarded the sponsorship in August when it agreed to fund the fabric wrap that will adorn the stadium from early next year until the end of June 2012. 3 months of fabric wrap. The fabric wrap isn't even going to be there when the Olympics is on. The company wants to use the games itself staged on a formerly contaminated site to help draw a line under the industry's past. There is growing outrage in India over the decision of the Olympic bosses, who are led by Lord Coe. Last week, a Labour Member of Parliament tabled a motion in the Commons condemning the decision. Lord Coe, who has refused to meet members of the Bhopal Medical Appeal, has now agreed to see the Member of Parliament for private talks. When the Sunday Express asked Lord Coe, he said,
"We won't review the decision. Dow is an IOC partner."
And Londoners living anywhere near the Olympic Park next year will find that getting married, commuting to work, dining, drinking, and even dying while the games are on may be tricky. This according to the Times of India, which I guess now has a rooting interest. Churches, bars, banks, restaurants, and thousands of other businesses near the park or on transport routes are already making plans for massive disruptions in service, deliveries, working hours, and the availability of cash. That's right, they're trying to figure out how to get cash to the cash machines. If you're getting married or considering dying and having a funeral nearby, reconsider your plans. The Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one every day. Thanks to Jim Ebersol Jr. for bringing those to our attention. Ladies and gentlemen, now news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Why wouldn't you call it Nice Corp? They had their stockholders meeting in Los Angeles on the 20th Century Fox lot. They could have asked me. I could have lent them a pass. Apparently, they had them. They had plenty for the people who were attending. And in case you're wondering how the Well, you know, we are a beacon of democracy for the world. And certainly corporate governance is a subset of the kind of democracy that we trumpet. Perhaps we trombone it. We try to trumpet it all over the world. So what is the democracy like in a stockholders meeting of a major international organization like NICE Corp? Well, here's just a sample from Friday's meeting.
I'm going to call the meeting finished. We've completed our agenda totally.
Okay. Noted in the minutes, please.
And so I'll declare the meeting finished. Thank you very much.
We have to conclude the vote, Rupert. So you have to say that the polls were open at 10:30.
The polls were open at 10:30.
It's now 11:30.
Now 11:30, and I'll ask the polls to be closed, and we will post with the SEC the final complete votes within a couple of hours. Well, certainly this afternoon, but as soon as they're ready to do so, it'll be there.
If anybody hasn't handed in their ballots, please feel free to hand those in at the appropriate place.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, nothing like calling the meeting over before the voting's concluded in the annals of corporate governance, ladies and gentlemen. You know, just a slipped his mind. Finish the voting. Finish the voting, babe. Now, more news of NICE Corp. The news of the world saga continues to grow. The British investigators have spent months sharing thousands of pages of seized evidence with hundreds of suspected targets of alleged phone hacking by the now-defunct newspaper. The problem, according to Reuters, is that each session with probable victims may trigger new revelations and new lawsuits, including possible litigation in U.S. courts. Most of the people who are informed by police that their phones have been hacked will sue for invasion of their privacy, says one of Britain's most prominent human rights lawyers, Jeffrey Robertson. Some celebrities are upset that they're not on the list so far and are waiting with patience to be informed by Scotland Yard. It's the new A-list. The main evidence, say victims of the hacking and lawyers representing them, consist of 11,000 pages of handwritten notes made by a private detective, Glenn Mulcair, who was paid an annual retainer by the shuttered tabloid. The notes, several people who have seen them, say contain names of suspected hacking targets, phone numbers with which they were associated, and names of possible associates of the targets. News International says it has set aside a fund of £20 million, about $31 million. They got that much? Really? To compensate phone hacking victims, lawyers and other people in contact with police about hacking evidence say they suspect News International will pay a lot more when legal costs are included. The losses caused by this are going to be over $150 million, says one lawyer who represents several suspected or confirmed phone hacking targets, including the family of Millie Dowler, the schoolgirl, dead, murdered schoolgirl, the hacking of whose voicemail opened up the floodgates of this scandal. And the BBC has referred the royal solicitors, that is to say, the law firm that represents the royal family, to the profession's disciplinary body over their work for the News of the World tabloid during the scandal, according to the BBC.
I'd hate to call you a liar, but I don't believe you.
Oh, well, Rupert, it's right here. Right here. Julian Pike, a partner at the firm, admitted to a parliamentary committee this week that he had known all along that News of the World executives had been making misleading statements to Parliament and the public when they claimed a single rogue reporter was to blame for the hacking. It's emerged that the law firm, Farrers, sent a letter to the BBC in March threatening to sue for libel when a BBC program suggested News International executives had made misleading statements, a letter that attorney has since defended. The BBC said in a statement that the news program's team were surprised to hear the testimony of the lawyer, since on the face of it, it seems to contradict one aspect of what he'd written in the letter to the program. As a result, we've written to the solicitors' regulation authority seeking advice in relation to their rules governing the conduct of solicitors. So, the Queen's lawyers may now be in trouble.
Hmm?
I said...
I'm sorry.
Well, all right. That was easy. If a complaint was brought to us about anyone regulated by the authority, say the Solicitors Regulation Authority, we'd, of course, investigate. It has already announced it's launching a formal investigation into the roles played by a number of lawyers in the phone hacking affair. Pike, for his part, denies he wrote a misleading letter to the BBC. He said his admissions to Parliament only concerned one case, a footballer whose phones were hacked and who received more than $500,000 in a secret settlement. Wait, they got nothing to hide, so why would not keep it secret? Nice people. Doing nice things. Nice Corp. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of talk and controversy about genetically modified organisms, GMO, as they're called, in our foods. This from the International Journal of Biological Sciences may shed some light. This is just the summary of the... I'm not going to read the study to you. I couldn't read it to myself, you know. I mean, I got a good night's sleep out of it, but... We present for the first time a comparative analysis of blood and organ system data from trials with rats fed three main commercialized genetically modified corn, which are present in food and feed in the world, mainly in the United States, where we like that stuff. GM corn-fed rats were compared first to their respective parental non-GM equivalent control groups. This is followed by comparison to six reference groups which consumed various other non-GM corn varieties. They describe their methods here. Our analysis clearly reveals for the three genetically modified organisms new side effects linked with genetically modified corn consumption, which were sex and often dose dependent. Effects were mostly associated with the kidney and the liver, the dietary detoxifying organs, as you'd know if you were watching the Conrad Murray trial. Although different between the three GMOs, other effects were also noticed in the heart, adrenal glands, spleen, and hematopoietic system. We conclude that these data highlight signs of hepatorenal toxicity. Renal, I know, refers to the kidneys. Hepato may refer to the liver. Possibly due to the new pesticide specific to each of the varieties of corn. In addition, they say, unintended direct or indirect metabolic consequences of the genetic modifications cannot be excluded. So eat up. It's good for you. Isn't it? Isn't that what that means? I know the words were so freaking big. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
I know you are, Katie, but get out of the way now. Hey, Katie. We need something else here. There we are. Katie, you're so eager to be back on the air.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
News of our friend the Atom.
It's foggy out here.
Yeah, that's why Brits like it in Santa Monica.
Can't even see my proton.
It's right in front of your face.
I don't have a face.
Eddie, the Atom, ladies and gentlemen. Always fun to chat with. Indian Point nuclear power plant and the nation's other nuclear plants must meet tighter standards for earthquakes, flood, and spent fuel pools. After the Nuclear Regulatory Commission voted this week to fast-track post-Fuk improvements. Fast-track. Wait till you see how fast that is. These will start soon, says nuclear regulatory spokesman Neil Sheehan. It's like what we did with security after 9/11. Uh-oh. The vote approved the recommendations from a task force set up to analyze industry-wide readiness for a major disaster like the one that in March hit Fuk. NRC staff will perform a longer-term Fuk review, but until then, areas that will see changes in the short term include, boink, reevaluate seismic and flood hazards, boink, strengthen the ability to withstand complete loss of power, station blackout, boink, improve spent fuel monitoring instrumentation, boink, bolster emergency operating procedures. The NRC staff should strive to complete and implement the lessons learned from Fuk by 2016. Oh, man. I got whiplash. That's so fast. That's Fast Track, ladies and gentlemen, in case you're wondering. I'm dizzy from the speed. In the Japanese city of Odawara, more than 62 miles southwest of the crippled Fuke plant, 400 tons of radioactive ash have piled up at a garbage incineration plant, which will run out of protected storage space in 2 weeks. Further south, the city of Kashiwa has been forced to temporarily shut its high-tech incinerator because its advanced technology that minimizes the amount of ash produced has the side effect of boosting the concentration of radiation. See, less ash means more radioactivity per thing of ash, you see. They're just two of a growing number of municipalities across northern Japan, according to Reuters, that face similar problems. The government aims to bring the Fuke crisis under control by December. Researchers say that problems arising from the radiation scattered over mountains, rivers, and residential areas are set to persist for years. Odawara has already cut the frequency of garbage collection by half to hold down the generation of radioactive ash, byproduct of burning contaminated leaves and branches. Nonetheless, fresh bags of radioactive ash will have to be left in empty outdoor space at the incineration facility with no proper shelter around them. Radiation levels of most of the ash are below 6,000, below 8,000 becquerels. That's safe enough to be buried in dumping grounds, but people living nearby remain worried for some reason. It takes 30 years for cesium-137 to decay by half, says Kobe University professor Tomoya Yamauchi. So I doubt the problem will go away in a year or two. Each time it rains, cesium deposited in the mountains will be washed down to where people live. Well, move the people. Japan's government will issue guidelines on testing for radiation and open call centers for the public after more so-called hotspots were found in Tokyo and other areas far from Fuke. The guidelines will provide advice on using dosimeters to improve the consistency of surveys. Two more locations with radiation levels exceeding safety limits were found this week in Tokyo. Cheap? Early work on two new nuclear reactors and upgrades to four old ones could cost the average Florida power and light customer another $2.20 per month on their electric bill next year, if the Florida Public Service Commission decides to charge people now for stuff to be built later. An investigation is being carried out into a batch of nuclear waste shipped from South Cumbria to Japan. I think we've had that story, so you remember it. I know I do. And Dateline, Silver Spring, Maryland, there are serious gaps in U.S. preparedness for a major nuclear radiation incident, with most states lacking resources to test for contamination, experts say. But what do they know? Addie?
Experts, schmexperts.
News of the Atom. Clean, cheap, safe, too seen to pimpin. Our friend the Atom. Ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
Open and her head in a mess, with her head screaming no and her heart saying yes. And I love that girl. It was back in that house full of drunkards and thieves when she first saw me rising up off of my knees. And she said, do you think you could show me that, please? And I love that girl. Well, I love that girl. Well, I love
the king's men in the castle, they're lying in wait. She says, now is the time, we must not hesitate. And I love that girl. Then she wakes me with coffee and kisses my head. And she starts to explain about something she's read. I said, darling, you haven't heard a word that I said. And I love that girl.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Well, last we looked in on Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of Britain. He was down at the Jordan River helping to baptize two of Rupert Murdoch's kids and becoming, you know, involved. Now, he's involved in Kazakhstan. According to the British newspaper The Telegraph, Tony Blair is helping the controversial government of Kazakhstan to improve its standing in the West. He developed a relationship with Nursultan Nazarbayev, the president of the oil-rich, Central Asian state. During his time in office, he met him in Kazakhstan in January and last visited the country way back in May. Blair's deal with the country, said to be worth about $14 million, is the latest addition to his network of international clients, which are believed to have earned him about $30 million since he left office. That's public service, isn't it? Blair denies making any personal profit from the deal and said the figure was incorrect. To deny making personal profit means, what, his corporation got the money? Through his firm, Tony Blair Associates, Blair already works for several governments and companies, including the rulers of Kuwait, J.P. Morgan Chase, and a South Korean oil company. Diplomatic cables sent from the Kazakhstan capital, published by WikiLeaks, have stated, quote, corruption is endemic among Kazakhstan officialdom, unquote. The cables also described, quote, severe limits on ability to change the government, detainee and prisoner torture and other abuse, unhealthy prisoner conditions, arbitrary arrest and detention, lack of an independent judiciary, restrictions on freedom of speech, pervasive corruption, discrimination, and violence against women, trafficking in persons, unquote. Spokesman for Blair says Tony Blair has helped put together a team of international advisors. He's visited Kazakhstan in May of this year to attend a conference. He's not personally making a profit directly or indirectly through any other company on this. Unquote. And atop UN environmental conference in Cartagena, Colombia, attended by more than 170 countries, has agreed to accelerate a global ban on the export of hazardous waste, including old electronics and discarded computers and mobile phones, from developed to developing countries, according to The Independent. That's you and me, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now news of outside. I know somebody turned off his radio right then in outrage that I made that noise. But, you know, I got listeners to spare. So, United States Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton has spent much of the past few days in Pakistan, talking to the Pakistani government. After it was made public that the United States had had a secret meeting with leaders of the Haqqani Network, one of the major terrorist groups allied with the Taliban, but separate from them. You know, because Every warlord likes to have his own thing. It's his own thing. The Haqqani thing. The United States said of that meeting in August, we just held a meeting to see if anybody would show up. The United States and Pakistan disagree on who suggested the meeting, and they disagree on pretty much everything else in their public statements. God knows what it's like in private. We may find out in another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the State Department years.
Secretary Clinton, I'm glad you could respond to our invitation to have this little off-the-record visit.
Well, President Zardari, thank you for waiving protocol and agreeing to our request for this meeting. Before we launch into the sordid details, do you think I could possibly get some coffee?
Of course.
If you've got French roast drip style, that would be...
It's happening now.
But you didn't tell anybody.
The military is always listening. Might as well take advantage of it.
I guess so.
So, I hear you've been having contacts with our sworn enemies in the Haqqani Network.
We just held a meeting to see if anyone would show up.
I know. We told them to show up.
Well, then, perhaps you need to re-swear your oath regarding your enemies.
Madam Secretary, are you aware of the level of humiliation caused to me personally by your country's decision not to give us advance word about the Bin Laden operation?
First of all, Mr. President, that was a very tightly held secret, even within our government. I didn't know about it, as I understand what happened. Even some of the SEAL team guys didn't know about it while they were on it.
Look, I'm not saying I didn't know about it. I'm saying your people didn't tell me about it. How can I maintain deniability when I have to find out these things from my own people?
And since last time I looked, your nation still depends mightily on aid money from friendly allies. How many times do you think we can go to the well for a country that insists on keeping snakes in its backyard?
We are, as you well understand, a poor country, Madam Secretary. Mm-hmm. We do depend on aid, but I have to correct you on one point. We don't keep snakes. We eat them.
Okay. I started the metaphor thing. I think it's outlived its usefulness. The folks we spoke to at the Haqqani Network had a couple of surprises for us.
Mm-hmm. They are surprising people, our enemies.
Indeed. You know, the first thing that surprised us was that they have an actual TV network.
Oh, have you seen the Pakistani version of The Office?
They said they couldn't afford to keep producing it without a new business model.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like them.
The other surprise is that they said they couldn't engage in substantive talks without a go-ahead from certain officials in your government.
Mm-hmm. I know they said that. We're listening on them.
Well, then, maybe they could bring me some coffee.
Madam Secretary, I hate to tell you something so obvious, but we not only listen to them, we tell them to say things like that, which we leak to our public, which then gives us the political breathing room to cooperate with you in some, but not all, of the attacks on them, which outrages our public, which is why we denounce them. The attacks, I mean. Mm-hmm. We never denounce our public, except in private.
Mr. President, I think you know that we know the names of the officials within your intelligence apparatus who couldn't care less about your political breathing room, but who sincerely support the Haqqani folks. When and if we ever start talking seriously with those folks, there really won't be much need anymore for a middleman, especially at a fee of $1 billion a year, will there?
Good Lord, woman, don't you get it? If the Haqqani folks didn't think somebody in our intelligence apparatus was supporting them, no way in the world would we be able to listen to them. Am I really explaining this to you?
Man, do I have to draw you a picture? We're closing out the Afghan exercise as of 2014.
And like your probable Republican successor, who might well decide to win a war for a change.
What was it Bill told me about this guy?
Hill, first of all, I'm not sure we should be having this conversation on a secure video link, because those are the ones NSA monitors most closely.
I'm trying to remember the next part. Can you get on with it?
Okay. You know how engineers say you can have a job done well, fast, and cheap, pick two? President Zardari is an example of how a leader can be corrupt, weak, and successful. But he's got a pick, too.
You know, if your flashbacks are going to last much longer, I'd have another meeting.
Mr. President,
with a couple of the Haqqani brothers.
We have hard information that that group was involved in the assassination of your wife.
Yeah. They were also involved in some more recent attacks on our officials.
So?
So, I guess you could say they got my attention. Ah, excellent, Rajul. Now, Mrs. Clinton, here is your tea.
Thank you so much, Rajul, and Mr. President, mm-hmm. But I'm afraid I'm running a little bit late on my departure.
Oh, from Karachi?
No, sir. From your office.
Oh, no, this is Rajul's office. My office is where the Haqqanis are waiting.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together they add up to Clinton something, the State Department years.
But what about the corporate culture of a certain corporation?
I agree totally that media companies should have a great social purpose too. If you think the culture comes from me, sit down and have lunch one day. You talk about it. You're suggesting I'm a very bad person.
No, I'm not.
Proud of the culture of this company. We have tens of thousands of extremely good, honest people who enjoy working for us, enjoy and understand the social purpose of what they're doing, too. And I can give you my absolute assurance on that, Father.
Okay.
Have there been mistakes made? Yes. And we're putting them right.
All right. Does the luncheon invitation apply to me, too?
Exactly how you hear it is exactly how it all went down.
Because I don't eat lunch.
It was later in the evening that the facts and the figures got turned around. Was a woman, yes, she did advance my way. And I can't be sure exactly, but I swear I saw her say my name. It was the right time, she was the real thing. I had to walk away.
See?
Don't wanna be stitched up, out of my mind, feeling strung out, lagging behind, all trapped in, can't do a thing because I'm locked down. Stitched up, feeling the burn, all strung out, I finally learned that, trapped in, can't do a thing because I'm locked down. I wonder where she came from, I wonder where she's gotta go. She's on her own. Girls like that don't sleep alone.
Alright, here's the thing.
That girl is flawless, and I know I'm not the first one to think that.
cause I'm not the first. I sure won't be the last. I spent my whole life looking behind my back. I just don't think I'm up to that. Stitched up, out of my mind, feeling strung out, lagging behind. All trapped in, can't do a thing because I'm locked down. Stitched up, feeling the burn. All strung out, I finally learned that. Trapped in, you can't do a thing because you're locked down.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, follow the dollar. During a contentious meeting in South Fayette near Pittsburgh, the township zoning board delayed a decision about a challenge mounted by a gas driller after calls for several members of the board to recuse themselves from discussions because they have signed gas leases with the gas driller. According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, says those circumstances are far from unusual. In a nearby county, which has seen heavy gas well drilling in recent years, 27% of local elected officials have signed oil drilling leases. Of the 349 elected officials representing 66 municipalities countywide, 94 hold leases that were signed during the past 4 years. There are 15, in which the majority of council members and supervisors have gas drilling leases. What are you going to do, says one official, a township solicitor, lawyer. Everyone in these rural areas has leases. Follow the dollar, ladies and gentlemen. Because, you know, it doesn't tell you anything. These are all coincidences. Say it with me now. And now, the apologies of the week. Nutty coincidences.
We're so sorry.
New Jersey Senate candidate Phil Misch is sorry for saying that women should be, quote, a lady in the living room and a whore in the bedroom. I would like to sincerely apologize for any offense I may have caused anyone, particularly women, as a result of that Twitter post that has recently been reported. He's been getting slammed over the past few days for saying, women, you increase your odds of keeping your men by being faithful, a lady in the living room and a whore in the bedroom. Initially, he refused to apologize. Now, he says, I didn't update the original terminology enough to reflect 21st century sensibilities. I don't care if I get elected or not. The New Jersey GOP called Mitch unfit for public office and said that despite the apology, he should leave the race. Green Bay Packers linebacker A.J. Hawk apologized for making an obscene hand gesture during last Sunday's victory over the St. Louis Rams. It was a joke and I kind of got caught up in the emotion of the game, he said. It wasn't meant to get out there for people to see. I guess he doesn't realize the games are televised and people have cell phones. The city attorney for Brea, California, apologized this week for muttered remarks picked up by a microphone broadcasting a city council meeting live on cable TV. James Markman was contrite after a closed-door meeting with the city council. I was under some pressure and wanted to leave the meeting at the regular time. If you were offended, I apologize to that. Unquote. He went on to say he's worked many decades in the city of Brea and, quote, he would regret having in any way diminished Brea's brand or reputation. Brea has a brand. You know, it's that place down there. Rapper Soulja Boy is trying to make amends for his mistakes and has apologized to fans after he was released on bail following his arrest in Georgia this week. He was detained on suspicion of drug possession. After cops stopped and searched the car he was riding in, they allegedly found weed, money, and a number of guns. Thank you, and I'm sorry, he tweeted. Love you forever. I don't think he was talking to the cops. A leading Chinese producer of quick frozen snacks this week apologized for the production and sale of bacteria-contaminated dumplings. The company has started the recall and destruction of the contaminated products. The contamination involves Staphylococcus aureus, or golden staph. It can cause various diseases, including pneumonia and sepsis. More than a half century after Guatemala's elected president, Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, was overthrown in a coup planned by the CIA, President Alvaro Colón apologized this week for what he called a great crime. That day changed Guatemala, and we have not yet recuperated from it, he said. It is a crime to Guatemalan society, and it was an act of aggression to a government starting its democratic spring. The overthrow in 1954 of Mr. Arbenz, a former army colonel whose policies attempted to narrow the chasm between the country's tiny elite and its impoverished peasants, squashed a 10-year effort to build a democratic state under a succession of military rulers who took power after the coup. Guatemala went through three decades of civil war in which as many as 200,000 people died. Dateline Niagara Falls, Ontario. A Canadian hospital in Niagara Falls says it apologized for telling an 82-year-old woman who fell and broke her hip in the lobby to call 911 for an ambulance. Is that Canadian healthcare? Controversial conservative talk radio host John and Ken in Los Angeles have apologized for the threatening calls their listeners made to an immigrant rights group. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Quickly, news of the warm. The Earth's surface really is getting warmer. A new analysis by a U.S. scientific group set up in the wake of the ClimateGate affair has concluded. The Berkeley Earth Project has used new methods and some new data finds the same worrying warming trend seen by groups such as NASA and the British Meteorological Office. The project received funds from sources that back organizations lobbying against action on climate change. Isn't that nutty? News of the warm. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. I think now it's 7490. Megahertz. They moved. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin. I'm going to check that frequency before next week's show just to make sure I got it right. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Nice Corp being able to stand the embarrassment of the phone hacking scandal. If you agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think we can stand that embarrassment.
A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.